It was just my way of communicating. Look, I've gone through this. I know it's heavy. I know a 14-year-old shouldn't go through this, but I did. And if you're going through it, let's talk about it. You know, there's nobody.
This photography podcast is brought to you by Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. Here is your today's host, W. Scott Olsen, with another fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast from Frames Magazine. My name is Scott Olsen, and today we are going to have a real treat. Today we are talking with Rudranch Nagy, who is a wonderful, compelling, disturbing in the very best way. I mean, really sort of wrap your mind around a new idea kind of photographer. Born in New Delhi, living in Italy at the moment, and doing work that is just mesmerizing in the sense of what it asks you to consider and the way he is looking at the world. Rudranch, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, because this is really, really cool work. And we're going to get to the images in just a second, but I want to start with a little bit of background, because you say something on your website right up front that is just really cool. You call yourself an accidental photographer. What do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm born in a place where if you talk about art, it's like you're in a hobby. You know, so if you tell somebody I'm a photographer, they will say, oh, you must be doing wedding photography. And it's mm-hmm. not taken as, you know, like a good thing. It's like, oh, well, he started doing photography as a hobby and he will come out of it and do the real job later. So, you know, when are you joining business? Well, photography is fine. So I come from that place. And mm-hmm. since the beginning, we were not that rich that we could buy a camera. So I never saw a camera in my life before I actually bought a camera. So I think I can remember maybe we had a Digicam. Okay. My father used it for like a day and then we never saw the camera. So there were so many things that there is no reason for me to be a photographer, but somehow I've managed to be one. And the origin of it and how I got into photography, that is also something which is not related to photography at all.
Well, okay, I want to hear that story in just a second, because yeah. I mean, you're from New Delhi, India. I mean, this is one of everybody's photography meccas. I mean, India is a photographer's dream. So, I mean, how is it that photography wasn't really respected for the people that were born there?
I mean, it depends where you are in India. So if you mm-hmm. are in West or in South, you are pretty much can do photography or arts in a way where people will respect you. They won't question you saying, he's doing as a hobby, you know, he will get out of it. But in North, it's not a place where you will hear about a cultural event. It's not that much advertised. Photography is just, okay, he's doing wedding photography, you know? So, and that too in a derogatory way, let me tell you. It's not something people will, you know, he's going and he clicked the button. Okay. So yeah. that's the photography people know. So it's not a place where you're culturally aware of photography.
Okay. Well, yeah. you went off to university. You got degrees in political science and sociology. Yes. But yes. then you went to Paris to study photography. Okay. Yes. Tell me how it started, man.
So it started in, I would say, 2007 on 22nd of April at 2 a.m. I remember this.
You're sure about this, are you?
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure. I was in astronomy club. And they took us to Night Sky Watch, you know, and they said, you will get 5 seconds and you will see Saturn and Jupiter from the telescope. And when I saw that image, that image of Saturn seeing from telescope for just 5 seconds was not only life changing, but it was life saving for me, as you will see in the other series I have done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I began photography, because I started looking up, let me check.
But why not go into astronomy then? Why not go into astrophysics?
Well, they need grades, you know. they don't need a person who's not well versed in it. I wasn't good, and it had in academics because of all the depression and all the societal thoughts. It was just like, what's the point, you know? So I was never good at academics. So I never had good grades to get into astronomy or cosmology. So that's why. And then I looked up on Google, and when you look at the images, they say 10 best astrophotographers. And then I realized, okay, there is more to photography than just wedding. That's how I began. And then I saw an image, I think it was by Raghu Rai, who's part of Magnum Photos. And he took an image of a child. It's a heartbreaking image, if you see. A small kid, it was like India's Chernobyl, I say, because there was a gas leak in a place. And there was a baby, they were burying that baby. The eyes was completely melted of that baby, and there's a hand over it. It's a really heartbreaking image, but that image took me to photography. I was like, okay, there is rawness in photography, which I wanted to tell, like my feelings, because I never spoke about, you know, suicidal thoughts as a 14-year-old. Or depression or anxiety. So that when I realized, okay, no, I can definitely do photography now. So that's how it began.
Yeah. Very cool, man. I mean, now you are very upfront on your website. You've mentioned it a couple times. I'm sure people listening are you know, wondering at the moment. You are very upfront about anxiety issues, about suicidal thoughts when you were younger, as being, you know, things that you've been dealing with, but also things that have informed your approach to photography. And we're going to get to some of your series and some of your images here in just a second. But I do want to go back to one more idea. Based on that, which you've got just on your the landing page for your website, where you say that, you know, you want to use the photographic documentary language to create a record of sociologically and anthropologically relevant situations. Okay, what do you mean?
I mean, there are topics on everyday life which you just don't pay attention to it much because it's happening every day. Like it's you become immune to it. So recording that everydayness and just bringing it out rather than just keeping it in, there's a trash series. You have seen many trash images, but you never pay attention to it. So just keep on, you know, make a record of it every day. Look, I saw that trash there yesterday and day before and then day before and the day before. It's there. And you just miss it. So just keep on, you know, pondering the thought, okay, we have to do something. Can we please pay attention to it? I know it's difficult, but let's do it. That's why all the sociological things, I mean, if we talk about more on the series, symptoms or killing myself, I can go more deeper into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm fascinated because, you know, you talk about using photography almost as a kind of diary. And, you know, a diary for a lot of people is you know, just something that you don't ever want to show somebody. It's different than a journal. It's different than an essay or something. You know, diaries are private. You hide them under your bed. You hope that your little sister never finds them, you know, that kind of stuff. But you're coming at the idea of a photographic diary as a kind of archive, as a kind of record that needs to be kept. But is it for now? Is it for 20 years from now? Is it for both?
It's for both, to be honest.
Okay.
I just got tired of nobody listening. So I said, why not just make images of those things which people just don't want to talk about and just put them in the front? You know, let's face it. Mm-hmm. What's the problem? What's the worst can happen? So, yeah, I don't think it is. For me personally, there's nothing to hide about in any of those topics.
Right.
So let's just talk about it.
Oh, very cool. And I mean, and to say it's a diary, I do not want to imply even for a moment that it is without artistic consideration or composition or understanding of light. Because I mean, your diary is really compelling, man. It's one of those things you look at it and you think, you know, here's somebody with an artist's eye. Here's somebody with an anthropological understanding of what he's looking at. So let's talk about one of your series that's probably most accessible to a lot of people because we've all lived through the COVID-19 deal. Talk to me about The Quarantine Diary. It's a wonderful series of images on a number of themes, but tell me how you got started. Tell me why you got started and walk me through. You got a different, you know, a number of different definitions to this series. Tell me what's going on.
So it started, I was doing my MFA in Italy when mm-hmm. COVID hit. It was like I finished the first semester and then boom, COVID hit. So our whole MFA went to lockdowns. So what do? You have your room. You are stuck in your room for 3 months, 4 months, but you still have to shoot. So I just thought about series of everyday thing, of mundane thing, which you know, repetitive. You just go through it in your room and you can't go out much. So one of the series I thought was, because I could look down and see a bicycle, which was where you think it's tied, but it's not really tied. It's just, there's a chain on it. So just to give the impression nobody steals it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept looking at it. I felt like we are in the same situation. You know, we are both, Cycle and me, are tied in our places. We are not moving. So just keep repeating it. Keep shooting it. Keep seeing the cycle in a different way at different times, in the night, mm-hmm. in the morning. So that was one of the series. And the second one was Within My House. So everything is dark in that series. And that was pretty much the time we were living in at that time. We didn't know what's going to happen. Everybody said, oh, just wait for 2 weeks and it will be fine. It's been 2 years now and we are still stuck with it. So.
Well, you know, I'm looking at these images, though, and let's go back to the bicycle one for a little bit. And on the website, you know, there's 16 images, all composed pretty much the same way. You know, the scene from your apartment down to a bench and a potted plant and where this bicycle is. And yes, they are at different times. There's different, you know, bits of light illuminating different areas of the frame and stuff. But these are not gloom and doom images. These are not even necessarily lonely images. It's a different way to populate this scene. They're, you know, they're in color. Some of the colors are quite vibrant. Tell me, I mean, the series has its own kind of idea beyond any individual frame. And the individual frames, you know, there's the old cliche, the sum is more than the parts. Is there an emotion that you would say defines this series? Because at least for me, it's not despair or loneliness.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's either way you want to get out of your house. You know,
right?
How long can you stay in your one place and just look at Netflix? You know, just go through the whole series. How many times can you do that?
Yeah.
So the coming out, the fresh breath. You know, the openness, the spaciousness of it. You eventually you want to go out. So that's the main idea of it. I'm looking from inside to the out. saying, okay, that's the ideal situation for me is to go out. You know, that's why the vibrant colors, that's why the sunny scene, that's why, you know, people walking by and you feel, finally I saw somebody, because I was living alone. Yeah. So I had no connection with anybody else.
How severe was the lockdown in Italy in terms of social behavior? I mean, could you go to the grocery store? Could you go, you know, just around the block?
Initially, it was like you didn't see even a bird, to be honest. take a jeweler's eye and you won't see a bird. It was that empty, and I loved it. That part of it, because Florence is really, really popular with tourists, so it was completely right. Filled. You would hear any other language but Italian there. So I heard Russian, German, some of the Indian languages, but you won't hear because it's a popular destination for people. So I like that emptiness of Florence, and you can truly enjoy it, but we couldn't go out that much. I mean, you can go to the grocery store with a paper saying, okay, I live here and I want to go to the groceries. That's it. That was the maximum. Yeah.
Wow.
Or just for a walk.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, these images are invitations at one level. I mean, I'm looking at the one right now. There's a little cat down in the corner sniffing at something. Looking at another one where, you know, someone's sitting on the little bench there, I think writing a note or whatever. And there's a lovely tension because, you know, you want to go join that scene and then you realize, no, you can't. You know, this is sort of forbidden ground that's really, really attractive. You have another scene in there where, again, you're looking out the window, but each of the images is sort of divided into a blurry left and right with a center column that's in focus and stuff. And these are the pictures, you know, out of the series that spoke to me the most, because they're all, you know, trying to see around a corner almost. You know, they're all implications more than explications, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Tell me what I'm really looking at here.
So the little seam you see in between, which is clearly in focus, and the two sides which are not in focus, they are mm-hmm. from a window and the space between the shade.
Okay.
So if I turn a little bit one time, just shooting the bicycle, and I turned and I could see, you know, the very first image from that series on the right, that was the first shot I took. And I looked at it, I said, that's such an interesting thing that we are, I'm getting excited to see something from that little few centimeters between the shade and the window. Mm-hmm. And I kept shooting it over and over again. And it was like, okay, it's again the emptiness into it. And then I put a little caveat into this series that I thought, I will only shoot until the lockdown is there. Mm-hmm. After that, I would just stop shooting, because that's the whole point. You're stuck in your right. place, and what do you do? So that's the hole between the shade and the window and little space. And that's your moment of connecting with people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, speaking of connecting with people, you have, you know, again, part of the series about the lockdown, you have a series of images of people you're doing video calls with.
Yes.
And, you know, the lovely thing about it is when you take a picture of a screen, you know, you have all the scan lines, you have all the, you know, distortion is the wrong word, pixelated is the wrong word, you know, but clearly it's a different kind of image when you're taking a picture of a screen. And so there's a kind of disconnect, there's a kind of lack of connection, you know, between what the camera sees and then, you know, what we would normally see. What gave you the idea to start taking pictures of people on your computer screen or TV screen?
I don't know, to be honest, because I was just talking with these people, and they are my real close friends, all of them. Uh-huh. And it happened that for a month I was okay. And then I was like, no, I need to start talking with people. I will go properly crazy if I don't. So the only way was video calls. Zoom just boomed at the time. And so we have to connect with each other through these video calls. And the problem with video calls is sometimes internet goes bad. It's not clear. Somebody will be talking an important conversation and it just stuck. Sorry, what were you saying? Can you repeat it? I didn't hear you were talking mm-hmm. about a real emotional thing. So so you see every single image, the face is hidden. And it's not fully clear who the person is. So it's like, yeah, you're connecting, but it's not the same connection. So the blotches on the screen, the pixelation, if you can say it, it's just not the same when you're talking with somebody face to face. That's how this idea came about.
Let's take just a quick break. We hope very much that you are enjoying today's episode. The very fact that you are listening to this podcast suggests that photography means a lot to you. And if that's the case, you might want to have a look at Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. We truly believe that excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit readframes.com to find out more about our publication. And now, back to today's conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you know, COVID asked all of us to sort of reinvent ourselves, to rethink ourselves as photographers, you know, both in terms of what subjects were accessible to us, but even our own approach to the image. And you came up with some really, really, you know, roll your socks up and down, wonderful, wonderful answers for that. But like we said at the beginning, you were also really upfront about anxiety and about depression and about thoughts of suicide. And away from the quarantine diary, you have a series which is breathtaking and beautiful and sad, you know, all at the same time. And it's a series called Killing Myself. And, you know, everybody, it's on the website. You got to go look at this. And it is not what perhaps you're thinking it is at the moment. So tell me, well, first of all, for somebody that doesn't have the images in front of them, describe, because you've got a really intentional composition here. Describe what you're doing, but you've also got a little bit of text going on with these. You've got a different, you know, sort of package. Bad way to, I mean, the right idea, bad, you know, not the most poetic word, but you're doing something really different here. Tell me, or tell people who are listening, what this series is about.
Okay, so this series is about my extreme depression phase from 14, when I was 14 years old, to 16. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's when I saw the Saturn and my suicidal thoughts stopped then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, going back to the seeds. So I came up. So if you're thinking about killing yourself for 2 years, every day you will come up with ideas. And every idea I came up with was like, yeah, okay, I can cut my wrist, but would it be painful to cut myself? So these are the thoughts I was coming up with. And while coming up with these, I didn't want to document.
Right.
You know, I didn't want a self-portrait. So I thought about, let's take these objects which I was thinking about, or places I was thinking about, and the ways I was thinking about killing myself, and create an emotion where it's isolated from everything. And mm-hmm. it's a complete darkness. And the only light in my life was to just kill myself with one of these ways. So that's how the series came about. Make it completely dark, just put the light on an object, and just illuminate that.
And that's the whole series. It's a completely dark frame, and there's a circle of light, much like a theater spotlight would be shining on, you know, the stage floor. There's just a circle of light, and in that circle is then a single object. You know, you have a box cutter knife there in the very first one. But then you've got a caption, and the caption is it would be too painful to cut myself. So, I mean, you're really explaining, you know, both what I'm looking at, but the reason why not, you know, as well. So there's that tension of here's how and here's why not is going on at the same time. You know, the second one is a very ordinary pillow, right? And then, you know, it says, how long will it take to suffocate? Open-ended. But then we get, I mean, you have some miniature toys in there as well, the bathtub, the airplane and stuff. Yeah. I mean, tell me just aesthetically now why you went for the miniatures.
I mean, it was practical at the time, to be honest. I could use a pillow and a box cutter and it will work in a studio, but I can't take a bathtub or an, you know, army tank.
An army tank?
Or or an Air Force, Air Force plane to my studio. So I thought, okay, if that's the way I'm going, there has to be a representation of it. So why not rather go with miniatures, which is somewhat similar to the actual thing. So the ceramic bathtub, it's intentional. I didn't want a plastic one because it makes, you know, fake. Plastic will always come out as fake. And ceramic, you can feel the ceramic. You can feel yourself in a bathtub, which is made out of ceramic. So again, these are things which can be connected with people as a positive thing. After a long day, you go and take a bath. But it was a completely different feeling for me, this series and with these objects.
Well, I mean, the choice of objects is brilliant because, I mean, I'm looking right now at the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and, you know, and your caption is, I have a fear of heights as well. But the fact that it is, you know, a kind of tourist's memento that you've got there. You know, you said at the beginning, this is not documentary. This is not self-portrait. This is all conceptual stuff, even though it's photorealism. You know, there's the little toy. This is a really emotionally and philosophically centered series. What is it you want me to take away from this?
When I started it, my aim was that I never talked about this with anybody. And I know there are people around the world who are going through the same thing, but they never talk about a word to anybody. And they just live in that, you know, that there's a heaviness when you wake up and you think, ah, I woke up again. What the hell? You know, I will have to go through this day again. So there's nothing positive in your life at that time. So it was just my way of communicating, look, I've gone through this. I know it's heavy. I know a 14-year-old shouldn't go through this, but I did. And if you're going through it, let's talk about it. You know? There's nobody will judge you. Nobody will. People do judge. Let me just say that. People do judge. Well, you're weak and you're this and you're that. They will label you with many things. But again, there are people who go through the same thing. So let's just talk about it. Let's think about it. I know it's difficult, but still, let's just talk about it. Give a chance, one talk, and that's it. You know,
that's important. Yeah. One of the things I really find, you know, engaging about your work is it's got this kind of stereo emotion thing going on where you've got the really dark, but always a glimmer of hope, always a glimmer of connection in there as well. It is not monotone in its emotional ask of those of us looking at your images. And you have a lot of series on here. You have a lot of really interesting, collections in here. And it's going to sound, you know, like you're focused on some of the darker things. You know, you've got Bare Minimum and you've got Extinctions in there. But you've got some good old-fashioned, wonderful street photography about, you know, protests in Paris and about marches for LGBT rights. Some really, really provocative and forward-thinking collections in there as well. But let's talk about a couple of them. Talk to me about Extinctions first.
Yeah. So that one came as a childhood. I used to watch Discovery Channel and National Geographic with my father. Mm-hmm. And we just used to love these animals. And we just spend hours and hours of watching Discovery Channel and these animals. And look at them. You know, they are so mesmerizing to watch. And then as I grew up, you start hearing, okay, we have a problem in our hands. You know, like we are killing these animals at such a fast rate that they can't just cope. You can't just madly kill without consequences. And that was the whole point of this series, that we still have time. Let's do something about it. And that's how this series came about.
But this one's got a darker tone than some of the rest, because mm-hmm. you say here at the end, you know, because what you're photographing in here are museum mounts. You know, these are not live animals. They're not out in the wild. These are stuffed animals in museums. And you say at the end, putting life-size animal bodies in museums doesn't show us the grandeur and beauty of these animals. You don't get the same feel of a living and breathing creature the way you would get in their natural habitat. They are lifeless, empty, and then it goes on from there. Why photograph the stuffed animals?
What, you know, I have never been to the zoo in my mm-hmm. life for some reason. I don't know why. But so zoo was out of the question for me to take photos, because they are eventually live animals. And these are all the species which are very close to extinction. And what do you do when species get extinct? You put them in the museum, in the life-size animal. So what's going to do that? Like, okay, you have put it. Now they are already gone. What do you want me to do with it? You know? So going to the museum and they are plasticky, you just don't feel the same emotion from these animals, even though in the photographs you will see that some of these animals, you can feel it. You can feel the emotion, like they're sad.
Right.
So that was a challenge to shoot, to show these animals also have feelings. They also have the same things we go through. Like, well, humans have tried to kill ourselves twice, but in the World War I and II, but they're not coming back. That's the whole point. And there's a great balance between animals and us. And we have to maintain that. And putting these caricatures of these animals in the museum won't do anything. So that's why the whole point was shooting it in the museum with those, you know, reflections of the glass, so that you clearly see that they are taken in an artificial environment.
Right. I mean, in many ways, you're photographing the future. It's a warning. You're saying, you know, if we don't wake up, this is what we're going to have. And I mean, do you conceive of series before you go out shooting, or do you take a couple shots and say, hey, that's pretty interesting, maybe I'll do more?
Generally, I think of a word before I go out to shoot. So, for example, Symptoms, I thought of the word overwhelming before I started shooting.
Really? Okay.
Because I wanted that burden of symptoms you go through every day in your life. And people don't realize it how heavy it is until and unless you go through it every day. And there are so many symptoms. So I need that hook to tie every single image. So I think of a word, overwhelming. So for killing myself, it was instant. Okay, darkness. Darkness okay. has to be the main point. And the rest I will make up with the lighting. So that's how I generally go about with coming up with the series. And then I can shoot and see how to go about it, which one works with the word, which one doesn't. That's generally I go about. Sometimes I draw, but I don't prefer it over the one word, which one mm-hmm. or multiple words I can hang my series on. That's generally the process.
Oh, it's, you know, this whole idea of a series is so compelling to many of us, and some of us find it accidentally. You know, we look at our catalog and we say, you know, I seem to have 200 pictures of parrots, so you know, I'm going to do a series on that. But the intentionality of it, when you're actually going out trying to remake the world around an idea, I think is a deeply fulfilling creative act. And sometimes you have to tell stories that really. You're never going to get it right. You're always going to get just close. And that closeness creates attention, I think. Now, of course, you know, I'm looking at your series here called Memories of My Papa. I don't care what the relationship is like, you know, loving or disastrous. Nobody can explain the actual 100% got it right relationship between parent and child. But damn, some people get close. So I'm looking at this image thinking, here's one of the ones. Interesting interplay between image and text. Was this an intentional series from the start? Did this begin with some images you already had? And what made you decide to do the narrative in text as well as the images, you know, in photographs?
Yeah, this is one of the series I was completely clear from the beginning how to do it and what I
really
wanted. Yeah. I mean, this was like, okay, I know. Because I was basing, again, with the word of memory. And as we know, memory is never clear.
Right.
So even if you're thinking about a memory, it's hazy, always hazy. You can't think of a moment and it's clear. There's always a haze. And when...
I'm looking at the pictures here. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. And he, same with the text. You say, yeah. Oh, what did that person say on that day? I can't really remember. I sort of remember, but I don't. So that's the whole hook to this series where I thought, okay, take the images of the things he loved, and I have my memory with him, and put a haze over it and blank some of the words, essential words from the text, and create a connection between, not really a clear connection between what you're seeing to what you're reading, but it's a complementary connection between the two.
I say, do you get people who don't get it? Because I mean, when I first saw this, you know, the haze over the image, I sat there waiting for it to resolve itself on my screen a little bit. And, you know, the missing words, you know, my first reaction is, well, what in the world happened here? And then, of course, I sat there for a second and I thought, oh, I'm being had. This is really brilliant stuff. Because you put me in that emotion or that idea of working to resolve for clarity. And, of course, the clarity mm-hmm. never comes.
Yeah, exactly. That's you can try your best to think about that memory in a crystal clear way. You want to preserve it, and sometimes mm-hmm. it's there, sometimes it's completely gone. So you can try it all the best, but you can think in bits and in photos, which you remember your loved ones and your parents. Mm-hmm. Just to not completely forget or not to think of them from their last, you know, difficult days they had. So that, right. that and it was my way of, you know, moving on from this this tragedy, because he suddenly died. He was doing fine, and he had three heart attacks in a month. And he actually, I woke up in the morning, and doctor was there, and he was making him walk, and suddenly he collapsed. That's it.
No.
In a second, he passed away, right where you see the first image.
Oh,
you know,
okay,
yeah, that's the place where he turned on those lights you see on the first image, and walked a little bit, and then he just collapsed and died.
Man,
and it was all it's just suddenly, and he was getting so better, like he was talking and eating well, and everything mm-hmm. was okay. He will make it, but no, he just passed, and I didn't want to remember him from those past a month, you know.
Okay.
So this was my way of moving on and keep that connection alive.
It is really strong work. Tell me what you're working on now.
I'm working on three series, because I like to work on multiple series at the same time. So I work mm-hmm. like four or five series at the same time. It's a little bit crazy. I remember, because I was going through my master's, and I used to present with nine series to them, and they say, "Are you okay? why are you presenting nine series? We just wanted mm-hmm. two or three." But so that's. But one of the series I'm working on is how I don't fit well in India. So currently I'm in India. So I'm looking at my house in a way where I don't fit, because of my what I'm doing and how people are opposite to it and mm-hmm. against it. So that challenge of a misfit in a place where you're not accepted or respected. The second series I'm working on is my first analog series I did in Italy. So it's my love letter to it, in a way, because I love that place. Mm-hmm. I wish I was still there. And one series I'm doing on India and religions, which is a sticky topic everywhere, not just right. in India. You just don't touch religion, do whatever. But I think it's a story which need to be told. So these are the three main series which I'm working on at the moment.
Well, very cool, man. Like I said, it is strong work. It's compelling. It is emotionally complex. And I'm really feeling grateful that I got a chance to talk to you about it and to look at it. Thank you very much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to Thomas for the invitation.
Frames. Because excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit us at www.readframes.com.